Diversity Music Group. Alex H. The Bomb Factory. Success.
Ladies and gentlemen, allow me to properly introduce the most incredible beast from the east, live and live in color, in shape fitted to leather and soft butter. Color up, my dollars up, I'm winning exotic cars to women, women and more women. More sinning, I'm addicted to success. Blessed, young and gifted, the bar's been lifting. Started from the bottom, I'm now on top of the world. Look, my, I made it, the new most hated. Underestimated since I haven't been painting. I saw these unrelated so they don't believe. But who cares, I'ma run a few years before I fade to black. My impact, shift back to order, deliverable manslaughter. In the first degree, I am king. Young, young, fresh, fresh.
Success. Special thanks to Alex Hurst there. Much appreciated. Success. Make sure you get that. Better Late Than Never off the album. Remember, you can get that anywhere you can buy your music digitally. Come on, man. 99 cents for the album. You get change back on the dollar. What's up, everybody? Good morning and welcome to the Green and White Show. Yup, it's your host, Joseph Haas. You know the deal. Follow me on Twitter at Jersey Haas, Instagram, Joseph Haas NFL. Hello and good morning, family, friends, and all of you for listening. It's another beautiful morning here on the East Coast. I mean, wow, I'm waking up. I'm looking at the, am I reading this right? It's 44, 45 degrees. We had a great day yesterday. We're hoping to get some good weather games as we, as we'll talk about the championship games throughout the show. You know, we're going to have our usual round of guests. I'll get to that in the flight plan, in the flight plane. Green and White Show, 162, January 22nd. What a wonderful Sunday morning in this brave new world. As I was talking to my Joe Bear earlier, I was telling him, man, I've got an expiration date on this whole thing. Let's just, I'm just trying to make it to January 20th, 2021. Let's just see if we can make it there all together. Yep, I'll be here with you until then. Imagine, Green and White Show still going on until then. All right, let's get to the flight plan. Let's talk about what we're going to discuss for the rest of the show. First, of course, first 15 minutes, we talk about the Jets, the Giants, a little local stuff. Whatever tickles the fancy. I'm definitely going to get into the UFC and maybe a little basketball as well. Then it's quick to the Mantini Report at 8:15. Our buddy Reverend Ralph Mantini joins us at Reverend Ralph on Twitter. You know, he joins us from Lombardi Ave. We're going to definitely talk a little Packers. We're going to talk about the last four teams. We're going to talk a little bit about the divisional playoffs as well. You know, kind of touch on those. We'll give him the props for his great score predictions. Hope you've been following him all year because his predictions have been awesome. Might have been good. It's been awesome. Then we're going to get into the Metro Sports Report. We're going to talk about all the local teams as well. Yeah, we'll talk hoops, some baseball, even a little hockey as well. Then, of course, top of the hour, 9 a.m., you know what time it is. Great debate time with our good friend Brian Benway. We'll have him on. We'll talk a little, you know, we'll talk some sports. We'll get into that, and we'll also get to some topics of the week as the week has gone by. And then, of course, to wrap the show around 9:15, we do East meets West with our girl Phoebe. We'll talk about the divisional playoffs. We'll talk about, we'll get more predictions as well for championship week. It's a huge NFL. It's the last great NFL Sunday. It's been another long season here at the Green and White Show, and we've come to this, the penultimate Sunday. Wow. I know you guys are all ready, so let's talk some Jets football. Are you ready to talk some Jets football or what? Yeah. What have the Jets done throughout the week to improve their team or the coaching staff? Coach Bowles now has to fill out the roster. He's hired a former Rams assistant to come over and help him with the defensive backs here. On the New York Jets, that's going to be defensive backs coach Denard Wilson. He spent some time on the Rams staff, also some time on the Bears staff, came up as a quality assurance coach there. So he's got some experience in the NFL, a little experience, played his college ball as a defensive back out in Maryland. We're wishing the Jets well with this selection and looking for them to continue to fill their staff with some you know, more willing and able coaches. That's, I mean, that's been a lot of the, what's been in the news, that, you know, who's going to be the next offensive coordinator for the New York Jets? Who's going to be the next quarterback for the New York Jets? I mean, these are questions that need to be answered. And until you show somebody what direction you're taking, I mean, you're basically what? You're going out looking for somebody to bring direction. That's not what you're looking for, an offensive coordinator. Well, the Jets have a lot of questions they need to answer. One question they won't need to answer anymore: what's Woody Johnson going to be doing for the next 3 years? We all know what the owner of the New York Jets is going to be doing for the next 3 years. He's going to be the ambassador to the United Kingdom. So our new president has tapped the Jets owner to be the ambassador from the United States, our representative over there at the United Kingdom, a very high honor. We all remember when President Obama went into the office and the owner of the Pittsburgh Steelers was the ambassador to, I believe, Ireland. I hope I got that right. I believe he was the ambassador to Ireland. I know that it did lead to a football game or two being played over there. We'll see if this leads to a football game or two being played in England by the Jets. Who knows? They've talked about expanding the NFL to the United Kingdom. Could it be Woody Johnson's kind of going over there, laying the groundwork? Could it be for the Jets? I don't know. I don't know if they never moved the Jets to London. But who knows? Maybe this is where some of this placement could come from. So exploring that. You know, the NFL is wherever they can find a way to earn some dollars, you know, the NFL, the Shield, will find a way. So that's a little bit of that. Let's get into a little bit as the dust settles on the other side of MetLife Stadium with the New York Giants, as they're still, reeling from their playoff loss. You know, the Cruz watch finally over. We'll see if Victor Cruz remains a member of the New York Giants going forward. A lot of conversations still, but it's been quiet the last week around the New York Giants. One story did pop up, and we'll see what the GM, what Reese does in terms of an encore for his performance in the last offseason, bolstering the defense. He's going to have to do a little work with that offensive line for the Giants, but he did a great job last season getting the parts that the Giants needed. Now let's see if they can get a tight end they can rely on, bolster the offensive line a little bit, maybe get someone who can protect in the backfield, definitely a runner for Eli. The running game will protect Eli as well as a blocking back. So he needs a lot of help there. But in terms of the story that came out around the New York Giants earlier in the week, I believe it was an interview with Landon Collins where, of course, this boat thing still comes up and the distraction it could have been, was it a distraction? Like they said, a little trip on Monday, as long as nobody did anything illegal, you know, in terms of substances or whatever, it shouldn't really have been a problem or impacted them. It was just the optic of it all. But Collins was asked, what about the defensive backs? And he revealed that, the defensive backs were actually asked to come along on this thing, but they ended up doing their own thing. And when questioned further, I believe Landon let it out of the bag that what the defensive backs did was probably worse than what the wide receivers did. So I'm still trying to figure out what it is they actually did. So if I ever do, I know, curiosity. So I'm going to definitely let you guys know when I find out. Green and White Show, Joseph Haas here. Don't forget, you can follow along on Twitter at Jersey Haas, as well as Instagram, Joseph Haas NFL. And don't forget to follow our buddy Amir Tillich as well, at Amir Tillich on Twitter. He's been busy, of course. We all explained a couple weeks ago. He's got the school thing going on, so when he can jump on, he can. So some weekends he'll be on, some weekends he won't be. Some weekends we'll try to grab him at the end of the show and things like that. And I know he's upset because he wanted to come on and talk a little championship NFL as well. So we'll make sure we get his opinions as well out there. So I'm going to get a chance, since I know he would never let me get a chance at the top of the show, to talk about the fight game and UFC. So UFC last night, now I'm watching this, and it's Bellator 170. Tito Ortiz against Janelle Solon, and I'm watching this, and I, as well as a lot of people on Twitter, the ending to the fight, I'm not starting to get in the camp where some of these fights are ending the way, you know, I was upset that boxing matches were ending, where there's some shoddy decisions, but we see a shoddy decision in the last UFC contest where the fighter actually said he didn't believe he won the fight. And by looking at the judges' cards, you kind of wonder what's going on there. So you take this as a backdrop as the UFC has several events coming up. UFC Denver, they've got a UFC Fight Night 104. And, of course, all the build-up to UFC 208, February 11th, out in Brooklyn. So there's going to be a lot of big main events coming up. Holly Holm's going to be fighting for the 145 belt there. We've got in Denver, Shevchenko versus Juliana Pena. It's going to be some outstanding action. That one actually is going to be on Fox. So January 28th, UFC on Fox 23, okay? The pre-fight starts about 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can probably get that on FX1. But I know that the fight will start 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Fox. I'm definitely going to be tuned into that as you're going to get a lot of flux in the weight divisions. We're looking at Nunes is really going to take this incredible win from, you know, not just beating Ronda Rousey, but, I mean, beating and destroying Miesha Tate. I mean, people seem to have forgotten how she destroyed Miesha Tate, who had the belt. She's really gone through her weight class, and now what she wants to do is do what Conor McGregor did and hold two belts. So she's going to wait for the winner at the 145 and challenge that person. A lot of people think that she should fight Chris Cyborg. I personally, I'd avoid fighting Chris Cyborg. And, yeah, I'm using the term avoid. Cyborg has popped positive for PEDs more than once. And I'm in the school where I just don't see it as being a fair matchup. I'm not a fan of Cyborg, people, to be honest. Yeah, she's a brilliant fighter when she's in the cage, but, you know, what she does to get there. And I just think she's a 140-something-plus fighter fighting at 135, and what she does to get to 135 is incredible. So, you know, we'll see if maybe the fight gets made at 145, if that's what ends up happening with Nunes getting there. So there's a lot going on in the women's fight game as far as UFC. As far as the men are concerned, I can't wait to see Woodley go ahead and get the rematch against the Wonder Boy. So that's the big matchup there. So a lot going on as far as UFC is concerned. You know, I'll be making sure I keep everybody up to date. And y'all know it's my favorite little sport that's not the NFL. So as the NFL comes to a close, like I said, this is the biggest, baddest Sunday of the year. We'll have to wait all the way until September for some more great football. So, you know, until then I'll be talking a whole lot of UFC and more, and getting UFC guests. Don't worry, also we're getting some baseball guests on as well. So working on that, got that going on in the works. So a little bit more back to the NFL. And with the end of the regular season, guys, we all know it comes coaching hires and coaching fires. So coaching hires, you got the Denver Broncos going with Vance Johnson as a head coach. And what's interesting is them getting Mike McCoy to come back as offensive coordinator. That was that really solidifies that coaching staff. And for all of those who aren't sure of Vance Johnson's qualifications, Vance Johnson was a wide receiver that played for the Broncos and John Elway. Vance Joseph's not a head coach. Now, for people who are looking for his qualifications coming off the Dolphins staff, he was also in the running for the position the last time around. So, you know, John Elway really has tapped him and looked at him as somebody who was going to one day be the future coach of the Broncos. The Chargers hire Anthony Lynn. He makes a meteoric rise from running backs coach to coordinator to head coach to now head coach of the Chargers. Mike Smith makes a great decision, okay? One that not a lot of people are talking about. Former head coach of the Atlanta Falcons decides to stay on as defensive coordinator with the Tampa Bay Bucs because he likes what he's doing there. He wants to create some consistency, some continuity with the team, which is great. He likes what's going on with the offense and the defense. They look like they really have something going, and he didn't want to disrupt that by leaving. Great job by him. You don't see many coaches doing that. And he's a coach. His name was in the running. His name will be in the running every year for a good coaching job as long as that defense does well. The Rams hire young Sean McVay. The Jags make a pretty good move here. Tom Coughlin, the VP of football operations now, and Doug Marrone is the head coach. Keenan McCardell played for Tom Coughlin back in the day. He's on the staff as a wide receivers coach. I like seeing his name come across the wire. So one of the teams we haven't talked about, a team that needs a coach and a general manager, the San Francisco 49ers, my Niners. Looks like they've tabbed Kyle Shanahan, Atlantic Falcons offensive coordinator, as the next head coach. So I would be pretty happy with that. I would be okay with that. I would love to see that happen for the 49ers. So I've got the fingers crossed there. We all know the news. The Chargers bolt to L.A. We all know the news there, which pretty much with that move, there left no choice for the NFL, really. Was it going to sit there and fight the Raiders or allow the Raiders to apply for relocation to Las Vegas? And it looks like that paperwork is going in and it's in the works. So Vegas Raiders, we're going to have a lot of change in the NFL. And something for the good. I don't know if I like the two teams in L.A. I love the Raiders in Vegas. Wish they could have stayed in Oakland, though. I'm going to miss that. I went to a lot of Raider games there in, on Mount Davis and in the Oakland College and the old Coliseum there. So I'm gonna miss that whole feel. But the Vegas Raiders sounds like a great prospect. And one last bit of news here in the first 15: the Colts fired their general manager. And I said this. I mean, that's definitely putting the cart before the colt there, because rumors were already abound that Irsay, that the owner, Jim Irsay, had offered the job to Peyton Manning and was looking at shopping around for a new general manager. And, well, he still had one. He doesn't have to worry about still having one anymore. So the Colts go ahead and make it official and fire their general manager, as we put a bow on the first 15 there. And I'm never really a fan of it. It looks like the 49ers are going to do the same, hire the head coach before the general manager. I'm not a fan of the argument or the conversation of, you know, whether or not you have to hire one before the other. I mean, there was a time where teams hired the general manager or hired the coach and then hired the general manager or fired the general manager, hired a general manager with the coach still on the staff. I mean, this was something that happened with more regularity, let's say, you know, 70s, 80s, 90s, when things like that changed. I mean, think about that for instance. You had longtime coaches in places like, you know, Pittsburgh. Of course, we all know that. In Dallas, there's only one GM in Dallas. That's the great Jimmy Jones. So Jerry Jones. So there are some ways in which it could work. I just don't want there to be this kind of conversation where people are coming back to it and making that a reason why it's not working with the 49ers. I believe wholeheartedly in what Kyle Shanahan could bring, not just offensively, but, hey, you know, great lineage. You're going to hear that with his father, former Broncos coach. Might as well bring it up. And former 49ers assistant as well, Mike Shanahan, right? Has some background there as well. So bringing in a guy like Kyle, I'm going to want to see what they do, of course, with the quarterback position and whether or not Colin Kaepernick is going to stay, go, whether there's going to be Blaine Gabbert, stay, go. There's so much to do with that team. And it is going to take an imaginative, creative general manager to bring the 49ers back to prominence, because, you know, it's not cool when the Niners are getting lumped in with the Browns and the jokes there. I'm not happy about it. It makes me feel bad as a longtime 49ers fan. This team was a team of glory not too long ago, and I'd like to see them get back there. I miss the competition against the New York Giants, as I'm seeing the Giants in the playoffs. Yeah, they were one and done, but at least they made it. You know, that's how I'm feeling about that this early season. All right, going to get a couple of things started before we get joined by the ref a little later in the program on the Mancini Report. All right, so I know he's going to want to talk a lot of Green Bay Packers and Cowboys, so I'm going to get into the second game. All right, I'm going to get into the Pittsburgh Steelers versus the Kansas City Chiefs. And Pittsburgh getting unbelievably lucky in terms of, like, how do you go into a playoff game, especially against a team as powerful and as explosive as the Chiefs are, with a defense that, you know, they showed up, I mean, only giving up field goals. You got to put the ball in the end zone. How do they think they're going to come away in a game like that where they're performing offensively? Okay, Ben Roethlisberger's getting the ball out, ankle and all. He's getting the ball out. Antonio Brown making an impact, having a great game. And yeah, I'll talk about the Facebook Live thing as well. You're looking at Le'Veon Bell dominating, controlling the game on the ground. Another unbelievable performance by him, just continuing to shatter the Steelers' record books in terms of his ground game. But you listen to the, I mean, you watch the Pittsburgh Steelers and field goal after field goal after field goal. You didn't realize that the fourth killer bee was going to be their kicker Boswell, but he ends up putting in a record, gave me flashbacks of a New York Giants San Francisco 49ers Super Bowl from a long time, I mean, NFC Championship game from a long time ago that ended up being a game of field goals that my Niners didn't come away with the victory in, but six field goals to win the game. And I just kept thinking, man, you're leaving this game close enough for a team like KC to get back in it. But again, you hear the criticism of Andy Reid, and was it taking too long to get the plays in? Was it late drives taking too much time where they needed to be a little bit more expedient? They weren't. Was it Andy Reid again and clock management showing up as his nemesis? Just a whole lot to crunch as the Pittsburgh Steelers come away with the victory in Kansas City. We'll get into the Mancini report and all with our good friend, the Reverend Ralph Mancini. He joins us from Lombardi Ave. We're going to talk Packers. We're going to talk a whole lot more. Remember, folks, you can follow him on Twitter at Reverend Ralph. You can also catch him on Lombardi Ave with some great articles, but you can always catch him Sundays, 8:15 Eastern Standard Time for the Mancini Report. Reverend Ralph, what's up, my man?
Hey, happy early Sunday.
Oh, without a doubt. Enjoying it. It's a championship Sunday, man. I'm like totally excited. You, on the other hand, I mean, you've been nailing it with the predictions again. I'm going to, you know, pat you on the back as well, going 2-0 last week. I got 1-1. But again, nailing it as we'll get into the Green Bay and Dallas game to start things off. And you nailed it again with kind of how this game was going to go. I didn't think that with Elliott getting 125 yards and Prescott throwing for 300 that the Cowboys were going to lose that game at home, but alas, they did. You just can't count out a guy with the talent and the ability of Aaron Rodgers. So, Rev, just tell me what you saw as the game progressed with the big lead and the comeback by the Cowboys and then Rodgers with the one Hail Mary at the finish.
Well, yeah, what I saw was, overall, I saw an aggressive Packers team that took it to the Cowboys. I think that the long layoff probably hurt the Dallas Cowboys. But,
really?
They weren't ready to play quite at the intensity that their opponent was playing at, was operating at. They got their stuff together, and I have to credit Dak Prescott, who just was unflappable for a rookie playing in his first NFL playoff game. He was unflappable. He was super. He got the team back into the ball game. The Packers, Rodgers, they made their plays at the end. It was kind of sketchy. You were nervous there at the end, but the Packers pulled it out, and it's one of those kind of like those magical seasons. The Green Bay Packers have that look of that Cinderella team, but more than anything else, it's Aaron Rodgers just having one of those MVP type seasons. Ironically, mm-hmm. though, he is going up against probably the guy who is going to win the MVP this year in quarterback Matt Ryan. So mm-hmm. what they got this week against the Atlanta Falcons is an offense that, you know, a lot of people just, I don't know what it is. It's just a lot of people just maybe are not giving enough credit to. Maybe they're just not in the public eye like a lot of other offenses or a lot of other teams. But the Atlanta Falcons, man, what a match. You know, the Green Bay Packers have really met their match. And in many ways, this Falcons team is, the offense in particular, is just very multifaceted. probably have more weapons right now than the Packers do, especially, you know, Green Bay in its state right now, where they're banged up and down the lineup. They have, you know, three receivers who, you know, they really didn't even know whether or not they're going to be able to suit up. And, you know, Jordy Nelson is going to be running out there today with a Kevlar vest, with his ribs like that in their condition. So it's tough, but, you know, it's the time of year where, you know, everybody's going to have to suck it up. You take a look at a lot of these teams. A lot of these players are coming in.
Julio Jones, for instance, and his toe.
A lot of these players are coming in. They're very iffy, but in most cases, when you reach this point of the season, unless you really just can't walk, they're gonna trot you out there. You're gonna suck it up, and you're gonna take one for the team. And that's, I think, what we're seeing, especially with a guy like Jordy Nelson today, who I don't really expect much from. But you know what? Give the guy credit. You know, he's going to try. He's going to give it a go. And also looking at the defensive side of the ball, Morgan Burnett is another guy who was questionable, and it looks like he's going to be able to play. And I think that's really key right there,
right.
Morgan Burnett, because the Atlanta Falcons, they got two running backs in the backfield who are just not only dangerous runners, but they're dangerous pass catchers. And without Burnett out there, who kind of serves as that nickel linebacker, without Burnett, the Packers don't have anybody that could probably match up in coverage with those two running backs. If those inside linebackers are going to have to match up against, you know, Tevin Coleman and Devontae Freeman. So
right.
I'm really hoping for Burnett. To you know, I know he's not going to be 100%, but at least kind of play close to 100%. It's just one of those games where both offenses are going to line up the scoreboard. It's going to come down to one or two turnovers. Whether it's the Atlanta defense or the Packers defense, one of those teams is going to make one or two of those big plays that are gonna give one side the advantage, and it's gonna end up being somewhere in the neighborhood of a 38-34 or 40-37 type of game. It has that type of feel to it, and I definitely anticipate it being that type of ball game.
Looks like you're calling for points in bunches. Reverend Ralph Mancini
and the Georgia Dome, nonetheless. You know?
Yeah, they're gonna put a bow on that one. That one, they're finally going to that's gonna be the absolute final game of the long storied history of the unenjoyed Dome. So they're gonna put that one to bed. Let's put this game to bed. The Green Bay Packers versus the Dallas Cowboys, as that game ends 34-31. There, again, great pick by you. And one thing that I'm gonna have to say before I let the game go is, I don't care that Zeke had 125 yards. They didn't run him enough. They run him more. The Dallas Cowboys win that game. Absolutely no question in my mind. Absolutely no question. There's no way it comes to end of the game heroics if the Dallas Cowboys run Ezekiel Elliott more in that game. He was dominating. He was tearing it up and did not get.
What about that last drive though? You know, what about before they line up to kick the field goal? Why are you throwing the ball?
Right.
Give the ball to Elliott.
How about
run some more time off the clock?
How about instead of that spike on first down, you just hand him the ball on first down? I know.
They totally mismanaged that last drive.
I don't know. You know, at the time, the only thing I would have wanted to say was, because of the package you ran, you had one of your best players not on the field. And because Ezekiel Elliott wasn't on the field because of the situation, you didn't have the opportunity to run down the field if you completed the first. Of course, you know, you go into a huddle, you in that situation, you get two plays. So you know, you're going in, you call one play, and in case something happens, you call another. and, you know, you don't have to go, you just get things moving quickly. And they hit on the first play. There's no way they're going to run down and go and throw another deep ball play. He had to stop the clock. He had to give Dak a new play. I get that. But it would have been great if Elliott was on the field, because then you just run up and you have an audible to a run, a dive, halfback dive. Everybody lines up. Instead of dropping back and spiking the ball, halfback dive, whatever that got you, would have been better than just spiking the ball, losing the down, and stopping the clock. But you're playing to win the game, you know, Rev? You're playing to win the game. You weren't playing thinking of how much time you're leaving Aaron Rodgers. You were playing to get that ball in the end zone and not have to go to overtime.
Yeah.
To get the ball into the end zone and tie the game. And that's what you were trying to do. You were trying to, at that point, you know, get yourself to 31 points. That's what you were trying to get to. And you didn't have time to think about how much time you might be leaving Aaron Rodgers. So if that's what he thought he had to do in order to get his young quarterback, you know, under composed and ready for the next play, I really couldn't blame him at the time. So at the time, I thought it was an okay play. I knew people were going to say something about it, but I was like, you know what? I know why he did it.
Yeah, look, I mean, what I was saying is that, you know, as a Packer fan watching that game, I saw the Packers defense really struggling. The secondary really couldn't do anything.
They're injured.
Of course. So my thinking was is that, man, if they go into overtime and the Packers have to trot out that defense again, they're going to lose this game. You know, so you know, my thinking was, yeah, you have to think, you know, you don't want to leave Rodgers with a lot of time or enough time to, you know, to come back and kick that game-winning field goal. So, because, again, I think if that Packers defense goes out there again, I think Dallas is going to score a touchdown and they're going to lose the game.
So this coach scared that? Was that mismanagement there? Because I'm not expecting. Because
no, my point is that on that last play, and I believe Elliott was even. I think they split him out wide too. They didn't even line him up in the backfield, if I'm not mistaken. On that play before the field goal, run the ball. You know, that's all I'm saying. Take an extra, you know, 35 to 40 seconds off the clock. You know, that's the way I see it, because, again, at that point, Packers defense had nothing left to give. They were just reeling out there.
Wow. Okay. I'm agreeing with you there that I thought that the Dallas Cowboys really lost that game in the end more than the Packers, but the Packers still had to make a, you know, unbelievable play to win that game. Reverend Ralph here joining us on the program. Reverend Ralph here, Joseph Huss here, Green and White Show. Okay, I was talking about the KT Pittsburgh game before you jumped on. Let's wrap that one up real quick and then get to the games that will be this week. Pittsburgh and KC, you look, if the Steelers decide to kick field goals, there's no way they're doing that against the Patriots and coming out with a victory today. So how KC with another, do you want to call this coaching mismanagement of the clock, Rev? Do you want to call this just taking too much time and not having any urgency? Do you want to just call it Andy Reid being Andy Reid, Alex Smith being the ultimate game manager and not being someone who impacts the game, and that's why he wasn't able to impact this game and throw his team into the end zone as opposed to manage his team down the field? Your thoughts on Pittsburgh coming away with the 2-point victory, 18-16, over the Chiefs?
I think a lot of it was due to the fact that they were going up against Alex Smith. I mean, you could talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers, you know, kicking field goals and not scoring touchdowns. Yeah, but
they
were
an injured defense.
Yeah, well, they didn't need to score touchdowns because over on the other end, Alex Smith, he's a guy who has his own issues in the red zone. We've seen it in the regular season. I seem to remember a game against Tampa Bay where, you know, Alex Smith, you know, he could have moved the ball or he's thrown interceptions in the red zone, and you know, he was just as ineffective in certain spots in that game versus the Pittsburgh Steelers. And then, you know, KC on that 2-point conversion, you know, they had it, and then they committed the penalty there. With
what do you think? Penalty? Yeah, hold.
Yeah. It was a legitimate penalty, I think.
Maybe
some refs wouldn't have called it, but you know, looking back upon it, I've seen the replay a few times. Yeah, the penalty was there. You know, it's just a matter of Harrison stepping up, getting low, and the offensive tackle not being able to gain leverage. And that was a penalty all the way. So in KC, they have no excuses there. They had a chance to tie it up. They shot themselves in the foot. And but at the end of the day, you know, you could say what you want. Alex Smith, he had a pretty good season, but he's not the type of guy who's going to win you a Super Bowl. And so the Pittsburgh Steelers move on. But again, as you said, you know, they're going to have to not kick field goals or score touchdowns against the New England Patriots. But the New England Patriots, as much as we talked about the Dallas Cowboys being kind of slow out of the gates, you know, having that long layoff, we saw the New England Patriots also, you know, come out slow there last week as well.
Right.
And I think, but you also have to give that Houston defense attacked the Patriots. In particular, you know, you saw them line up, you know, guys like Merciless and guys like Clowney, you know, kind of like line them up inside where, you know, they had the mismatches there on passing plays, you know, against the interior of that New England offensive line. So the way that they attacked them was just they did a great job there. Romeo Crennel and Mike Vrabel, they did a great job of lining up those players inside against those interior offensive linemen. I think this week, I think you're going to see something kind of similar, at least the New England Patriots are going to try to do something similar to what they did in their first meeting against the Pittsburgh Steelers, where they dominated them by running the ball. And, you know, last week with LeGarrette Blount, he only had maybe like 1 or 2 days of practice. I know he was sick going into that game during the week.
Right.
I think that kind of had a big impact on him and the game plan in general. So I think this week, I think we're going to see a lot more LeGarrette Blount. We're going to see them line up in a lot more of those heavy packages, you know, with two tight ends or two running backs, either 12 personnel, 21 personnel. You know, those are the kind of packages where the Patriots have done really well in the recent past. So I think what they're going to try to do is, again, just dominate with the running game. And, and on the other side of the ball, they're going to have to stop Le'Veon Bell in those early downs. I heard somewhere over the past five games.
Can anyone stop that guy?
It's going to be tough, but you have to be disciplined. You have to stay in your lanes because that guy likes stopping his feet, and he likes, you know, that old patient running style where he, you know, he picks and chooses and stops and starts, you know, but you got to be disciplined. You can't, you know, try to be a hero. You know, and try to penetrate the backfield because he's just going to cut back. He's going to take advantage of that opening that you're going to present to him, and he's going to, you know, run for a big game. Now, again, over the past five games, there was a stat somewhere where it says Le'Veon Bell is averaging 6.3 yards per carry on first down over the past five games. So you got to stop him on first down. That's where it all starts.
That is unbelievable. How does an offense not? I mean, think about it. If you're on second and short, half your drives of a game, because I'm assuming that's not every drive of every game. Let's just say half the drives. You've got a second and short. That's where you take your shots. That's where you go downfield.
That's right.
That's where you want to get
kind of like
open.
Your free play.
Right. That's why you have a team that can score and put up, you know, points. And that's why it baffled me that they only got 18 against the Chiefs. But, you know, credit to the Chiefs defense. Now, quickly, just going back to that, Reverend, Kelce, he really showed himself out there. Number one, you know, his post game, very unprofessional. And, you know, him calling out the ref, who, by the way, is going to be the referee of the Super Bowl, the ref that he called out.
Paul
is now going to, yes, who's going to be the referee at the Super Bowl. So that's how highly the NFL thought of him throwing the flag there and that exchange. Now, it's kind of died down. You don't hear too much about it. But I kind of sat back and said, you know what? If Odell Beckham Jr. had acted that way, we'd still be talking about it. Do you agree or disagree?
Well, comparing him to Odell Beckham Jr.?
Yeah, if Odell Beckham Jr. had that kind of
when I look at Kelce, it seems like, I don't know, he kind of fancies himself a little bit.
Don't forget the push on the field, the unsportsmanlike conduct where he chucks a guy and throws him on his back. I mean, come on, we'd be talking about that.
I'm looking at Kelce, and a lot of times, you know, I see, like, he kind of fancies himself as maybe like the next Rob Gronkowski. He's trying to be outrageous. He's trying to come up with these dances. And he loves the attention. He loves the spotlight. But I do see a lot of immaturity in Travis Kelce. I don't know what's going on in his head. He loves the attention. He loves the accolades. But you got to act like a professional, man. You know, calling out the refs, what good is that doing? What good is that doing to you or to your team? You're looking like a fool out there. I agree. I think that, you know, maybe in the off season, he'll come to his senses. Maybe somebody will talk to him. For as great of a player as he is, and you can make the argument that he is the top tight end in the NFL right now, you could certainly make that argument. His behavior is not that of a leader, and that's what he should be for that team right now, because you know, he's been there for a while. He's a guy that they count on to make big plays. But even against the Pittsburgh Steelers, I seem to recall him dropping a big pass there in crunch time. He's not all there yet. You know, he thinks he's the top guy. He thinks he's a top tight end. He's not there yet. He could certainly improve in a lot of areas, starting with his on-field behavior.
Yeah, without a doubt. We'll definitely. I didn't give you a chance. As we put the bow, like I said, on the Kansas City Chiefs for the rest of the season, and we'll see them as they'll start their 2017 in September. They give you a chance to get into Pittsburgh and New England. Do you think the Steelers have a chance of toppling and stopping the New England Patriots? I mean, I went back and I took a look at my Super Bowl pick, and it was New England and it was Arizona Cardinals versus the Green Bay Packers. So you know where I'm going here. I'm going to look for New England to try to take this one, and I can't see why they can't. But I mean, they had a little flu bug. The Steelers got a flu bug going through them. You've got some injuries in terms of wide receiver four. You've got Bennett at tight end position who's going to be, you know, going to be gimpy at the best for Brady, who looked like he was dealing with a little something last week, and that could be why he wasn't so good. Blunt, you talked about that earlier. It's not as easy or some sort of cakewalk for the home team. So your thoughts on the Steelers and the Patriots as they get ready to tussle? They're the late game.
Yeah. I think the Patriots, they're going to play disciplined ball. They're going to ask all of their guys, especially their safeties or defensive backs, to tackle well. That's what they do. I think they're going to do enough not to shut down Le'Veon Bell. Nobody's going to be able to shut down Le'Veon Bell right now with the way he's playing. They're going to do enough to contain him. I think they'll do enough to keep him out of the end zone, and they're going to put the game into Ben Roethlisberger's hands. And, you know, Roethlisberger, he was better last week, but I don't really see him, you know, playing at that top form right now, and I don't think he'll play well enough to throw his team to victory against the Patriots. So I think the Steelers will give him a good match, but I like the Patriots here. I would say by score of, I would say probably like somewhere in the area of 30-24 Patriots.
30-24 Patriots, close it out, and you've got, in your scenario, like New England and Green Bay in the Super Bowl, basically. That's your big game prediction, basically, huh? You're looking to see the Patriots. I'd love to see a Brady Aaron Rodgers Super Bowl. That would be just incredible. The build up for the 2 weeks, you know, the media would just gobble up the storyline of Aaron Rodgers needing to prove it. Let's play it forward. I mean, not like we won't have 2 weeks to talk about it. We don't even know if it will happen. So we might as well enjoy it while we think about it. Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers. Just imagine. What do you think? What do you think? Not just the buildup, but what do you think would happen? Do you think Aaron Rodgers could single-handedly will his team like he did this past week? Do you think Tom Brady would just be that precise, you know, Terminator under center and be methodical and just, you know, spread the ball around the field and lead his team to victory? Do you think it'll be the defenses that dictated a game like that as we allow ourselves to daydream a little bit, Rev? What do you think would happen?
I think that it's easy to expect Aaron Rodgers to go out there and to work his magic. He's going to need help from his other players on the offensive side of the ball. I think a key guy both today and if they make it to the Super Bowl is going to be Ty Montgomery. He's kind of like the jack of all trades. He is. He's turned into the guy that they're leaning on in the running game. But his ability to play receiver, his ability to line up in different spots along the formation, you know, it really confuses opposing defenses. It's like, how do we play this guy? Do we load up the box or do we add an extra defensive back? So I think he is going to be a key guy today, and I think he'll be a key guy down the road if they do make it to the Super Bowl, a guy that, you know, Rodgers is going to be able to lean on both as a runner and receiver in a lot of different plays, a lot of those delayed screens, whether you talk about end-arounds, whether you talk about shallow crosses. I think Ty Montgomery is going to be a guy that's not going to be, you know, as important as Aaron Rodgers, but he's the guy that's going to help Rodgers out a lot. He's going to play a huge role down the stretch here.
2-0 on his picks last week. I dare to dream, but I'm really looking at his picks this week going, wow, those are pretty tight. So we'll see if he goes 2-0 again this week. The Rev has been hitting us with great predictions all season long, as well as on-point analysis. Remember, folks, you can catch him on Lombardi Ave anytime, LombardiAve.com. You know you can always catch him here on the Mancini Report on the Green and White Show and on Twitter at Reverend Wild. Hey, Rev, man, I appreciate you. Enjoy the game Sunday. They kick off late, but it's going to be a fun Sunday of football. Catch you again next week.
Can't wait, my friend.
Thank you, and much appreciated. Like I said, the Reverend Ralph Mancini brought to you by LombardiAve.com. Always joins us. Always a great time with him. Totally really expanded the Mancini Report because, you can't just give him a little bit of time because talented with the predictions as well, and also his breakdown of the Packers. And, you know, we're getting a chance to follow the Packers throughout this amazing season and having somebody who watches them up close. Because, like, you know, he confesses he's a fan, but – you know, also is very, when a lot of people were hesitant early in the season to say a change needed to be made at head coach with the Packers, he was somebody who was very upfront with, you know, if that's what needs to happen, that's what needs to happen. And, you know, he hasn't backed out from that. We'll actually end up having a lot of time to discuss the Packers and their future as they continue to march forward, as we continue to march forward. That's right. Let's get to the Metro Report real quick. Let's talk about a little bit of the MLB around the NYC area. As we look outside, man, the sun's shining. It's about, it's almost a pitchers and catchers weather, isn't it? I mean, 40-something degrees on the thermostat there. I'm just like, wow. All right, so Yanks getting some people in the fold, avoiding arbitration with a bunch of players. Pineda gets about $7.5 million. Didi Gregorius, who gets a big raise up to $5.1 million, I still think is very undervalued. I really think he should be more of a upfront player coming in, taking over for Derek Jeter, And, you know, whoever wants to be the guy after the guy. But Didi Gregorius has played the position and played it well. As far as I've heard, Dylan Betances still hasn't inked the deal yet, but I'm sure that is in the works, so I'll have to follow up on that as well. But Adam Warren, Austin Romine, these are all players that are all signed. Aaron Hicks, and so basically the Yankees getting players in the fold and avoiding arbitration and big money. Now the Mets, on the other hand, they gave some pitchers some big raises. Matt Harvey's raise isn't as big. He only got 5.125 only. But you saw people like Jake DeGrom get a big raise from 600K to nearly 4 million. Yuris Familia, he gets a big raise. He's up at around 7.5 million now. Travis d'Arnaud gets a raise. Addison Reed, Josh Eggen, these are all players they avoid arbitration with. But you're seeing players making going to start to make some big money on that Yankees and on that Mets pitching rotation. And well, they've got some great arms, you know. They're going to have to pay these arms to keep them. So this window is going to close as more and more dollars need to go towards the pitching staff, and there'll be less for the DHs, or the other DHs, excuse me, for the power hitters of the world, for the fielders of the world. So, I mean, they've got enough going on in the outfield. I just can't wait to see what the Mets end up putting together, because there's a plethora of talent that just needs to be kind of jostled and nurtured and coddled the right way. So we'll see how that works out. Major League Baseball Hall of Fame announcement, and that's one that I definitely wanted to get into. And I'm going to save a little bit of that conversation for when we get Brian Benway on in the great debate, but I wanted to get into a little bit of that here in the Metro report. Now, Tim Raines, way overdue. Yvonne Rodriguez, first ballot? Really? And Jeff Bagwell. I'm really scratching my head on Jeff Bagwell now. Having a conversation earlier. And I just don't see how, okay, why it took Tim Raines so long, that was beyond me. 20-something year vet, multiple All-Star games. He was a speedster. I remember, and I only got to see the tail end of his career. I didn't get to see him when he was at his best and at his fastest. But Tim Raines, Tim Rock Raines, they call him, I think should have been elected far before this. Now, Yvonne Rodriguez as a first ballot guy, only Johnny Bench as a catcher. Now, yeah, he was talented. He was a talented catcher, but he's not a guy. You can't tell me that he wasn't one of the guys who's a PED guy. So are you telling me that, you know, the PED guys, the Bonds of the world, are going to have an opportunity to get into the Hall of Fame? Jeff Bagwell. There were some whispers around him. Now, this is a guy that I've seen in person, and with the background I have, being around athletes and being in training rooms, and seeing that you just can't convince me of anything other than Jeff Bagwell was somebody who used performance-enhancing drugs. I'll never be able to prove it. I'll never be able to go out there and say, yes, Jeff Bagwell, you are a user. I'll tell you what I think. I think that Jeff Bagwell and Yvonne Rodriguez are the first in what's going to be assembly line of guys who were who have the taint, the stench, the smell, the hint of PED around them. So, Yvonne Rodriguez, Jeff Bagwell, Tim Raines, your 2017 Major League Baseball Hall of Fame class. Guys who I think should be in, who still aren't in. One of the greatest DHs I ever saw play, Edgar Martinez. He is what any other DH I look at and I compare them to Edgar Martinez. Can you provide to a lineup what Edgar did? That guy was as much a regular part of the lineup as any of the other batters. Tremendous, and I know he could pick up a glove every once in a while and play a little first, but Edgar Martinez was an outstanding designated hitter and should go into the Hall of Fame as such. I know Albert Bell's off the ballot, and who knows what it's going to take for him to get back to get into the Hall of Fame. But I just think that early on, Albert Bell was one of the most dominating hitters that I had seen prior to really Albert Bell was a power hitter, and then Barry Bonds was more of the slap guy. I actually thought more of Bobby Bonilla being more the power guy than Barry back then. And sure enough, Barry Bonds should definitely be in the Hall of Fame. And if you want to go that far, I have an issue with the Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens conversation, because it always seems to be Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens. Like, they both need to go in. And I can make an argument that I would put Barry Bonds in, and I would be very hesitant as to thinking about putting Roger Clemens in. And then I get to debate. Oh, really? Why? Why? Because there probably isn't a person who watched baseball who wouldn't tell you that Barry Bonds was a Hall of Fame player before any hint or conversation or anything about PEDs ever came up. You won't find too many that will tell you, man, you know what? No. There's consensus. He was pretty much a Hall of Fame player. Were you saying that about Roger Clemens? And that's where I have the conversation. I just don't think people thought Roger Clemens was anywhere near a Hall of Fame pitcher until the conversation of performance-enhancing drugs around him came up. So that's where I stand with him, that I would put Barry Bonds in, but I would be hesitant on putting in a Roger Clemens because of that. And, you know, how do you know when? I'm just going by consensus here. Pretty much his Pittsburgh days and early San Francisco days, there was pretty much no talk of PEDs. When the ball started flying Pac Bell, then the whisper started, but Roger Clemens was pretty much out of baseball and, you know, picked up off the scrap heap by the Blue Jays and all of a sudden, you know, you don't look back as he wins a couple of back-to-back Cy Youngs, and Roger Clemens goes on to become Roger Clemens. Real quickly, before we get to the top of the hour here, Green and White Show, Joseph Haas here, make sure you follow along on Twitter at Jersey Haas. Make sure you're also Instagram and Joseph Haas NFL. You can always get the link to this in each and every show that we do. Just, you know, go to the bio. You can hit the link in the Instagram bio and you get the most recent show like this one. Or you can always search on Twitter, hashtag GAWS. You get all the shows that way as well. Now, getting to the NBA. The All-Star starters have been announced, and there has been a glaring omission. The East, well, that's LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, Jimmy Butler, the Greek Freak, who is just outstanding watching him play. And then, DeMar DeRozan from the Raptors is also on board. DeMar DeRozan, he's just kind of like star, in my opinion, I'm sure. I know he's very good, but he just always seems to be just, you know, a B-level star. And on the West, we got the Golden State Warriors, Steph Curry and Kevin Durant. We got Kawhi Leonard. We got James Harden and Anthony Davis from New Orleans. Who's missing? Mr. Triple-Double. Russell Westbrook. What happened? How did he not get selected as a starter? You know what? Some may say they got this wrong. Can you say they didn't get this right? The turnaround between the Houston Rockets is it's definitely a James Harden thing. He's changed the way he plays the game. He's passing more than he's ever passed the ball before, and that's leading to the Houston Rockets becoming this better team and showing that their coaching system to be actually something that works. James Harden, they got it right. There's no way you leave Kawhi Leonard off the team, and there's no way you leave Anthony Davis or Steph Curry or KD. Could you say that Steph Curry possibly could have gone back and forth with Russell Westbrook? Well, that's going to be the debate. We shall debate. But in the meantime, as we get closer and closer to the top of the hour, you know what that means. 9 a.m. here, Green and White Show. Great to have everybody listening. Of course, that means it's great debate time. We will welcome in our great debater, the great Brian Benway. Make sure you follow him, everybody, on Twitter, at Brian Benway. That's with a Y, not with an I. And from Brian, what's up, boss? How are you doing today?
Hey, how are you today? Happy Sunday.
Definitely. Happy Sunday, my man. It's actually really, really warm out this way. I don't know if you got the news yet from the folks, but, I mean, we're dealing with some – I mean, I'm waking up to 45 degrees, and, you know, we did 55 yesterday. So I just wanted to ask, how's the weather down there by you?
I'm really happy for you. However, you're going to be a little bit upset with me when I tell you that the past 3 days it's been about 80 degrees here, and as I look outside right now, it's about 65 degrees and sunny. So it is fantastic weather down this way.
I see. So what you're trying to tell me is it's still a little gloomy here in the blue states while it's nice sun shining in the red states. Is that what you're trying to tell me there, Brian? Is that where we're going so early in this conversation?
I wasn't going anywhere like that. You just assumed that that's what I was talking about. And, you know, I mean, that's what, you know, what happens when you assume, right?
Yeah, without a doubt. Well, I figure I'd get the party started. And, well, in this brave new world, we'll always have a ability to have that conversation. First, a little sports, then a little fun. My man, I can't believe when I heard this and really hearing it live, you just, okay. I'm going to bring us back to Pittsburgh, Kansas City football game. Post game, you've got Antonio Brown doing his Facebook Live thing in the locker room. I mean, athletes and social media now, we get it. It's a part of life. There are mandates that say you can't do it a certain time before a game and a certain time after the game. People skirt that a little bit. But this, I think, was a more violation of the locker room than anything, as he leaves it running, and you hear the coach giving his post-game speech. There are a lot of players in the locker room, you know, really in their element, where they think they're having private moments with teammates. They're really having moments being shared around the world with everyone. So I've got to ask you, Brian, in terms of violation of team and trust, and then also where you see this going, this athlete and social media, and where it's going to end up.
First thing is, when you look at locker rooms, and you kind of brought it up there, the locker room is a special area for players and coaches to have their moments. And as a former broadcaster, I was the voice of a professional hockey team for 5 years. So I was in our locker room a lot, pregame, postgame. So I got to see a lot of those moments on the bus, on the airplane. That's kind of a moment where there's not media around a lot of times. You know, there are certain times when he is in there to interview players, but for the most part, that's a sanctuary. That's a place where coaches and players can be themselves, where they can say things that they are not going to say publicly. And then now you've got that Facebook Live video, which we know what was caught on there in the Steelers locker room. And I bet you they're going to have a rule for the Steelers and say, hey, no live videos on Facebook in the locker room anymore. I bet you that might be brought up. And to your point about players and athletes with social media, it only gets bigger from here on out. You know, we have a lot of athletes that do a lot of great things on social media, like promoting certain awarenesses or promoting certain foundations and fundraisers. And, you know, fans want to be as close to their, you know, team players as possible. So social media brings you into their lives. So it does a lot of great things. Also, it can have an adverse effect. Now, let's look at how the Patriots are looking at it. The Patriots don't need any more material. They are already a focused of a team and a franchise as you will ever see. So I don't think the Patriots need it as locker room material at all. I don't think that they're a type of team that needs that. But it doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt. And you know what? Maybe they are what the Steelers say they are. You know, you never really know. But to kind of go back to it, I bet you the Steelers are going to nip this in the bud eventually.
Right.
Maybe other teams are going to follow as well.
Right, I could see that completely. They're the kind of franchise where you just, you know, you don't expect this from. We hear that a lot. You know, you talk about the Steelers and the Giants as being these model franchises of the league, and we're hearing a lot about the Steelers and the Giants and some of their players who aren't being so model. So there's just a little aside there. I wanted to definitely bring that up because I did want to get your opinion, especially from your background, in terms of the just that whole violation and feel of a locker room. And right, with the way the modern athlete is now, this is something that's going to be dealt with. Like, teams are going to have to do what you said, different rules and things of that nature to basically, you've got to manage this in-house. I wonder now, if you're a head coach, how you feel. Are you going to start being more of a hard ass, I guess, you know, for lack of a better term, in terms of your players on the practice field or when you're in these private moments? So it's like, kids, okay, put the phones away, Now, I've got to ask you this question, looking from the outside looking in. Brian, I'm sitting here, and I've got to listen and watch and endure what is the New York Knicks for the last 4 or 5 years in this mellow era, semi-rebuild. What is Phil Jackson trying to do? And now this team basically looks like a team that's falling apart. Melo misses a late game shot last night. And then you look not just across the bridge in Philadelphia to a team that basically wins 15 games a year the last 2-3 years. But they look like a better team right now and look like a team that has more of a future or a plan than, or options, let's just say, than the New York Knicks do. So looking at it from where you are, do you see what I see, whereas the Knicks attempting to go forward slowly have really, really gone backwards, whereas the Sixers have just really taken this giant leap forward in just the last couple of months and leapfrogged the Knicks in terms of organizational development?
Yeah, where I sit, you know, there are the Texas Triangle teams down here. So there's the three Texas NBA teams, as you know. And me, you know, being from New York State, I look at still all of the New York teams. And you can't not help but watch what the Knicks are doing. They are one of the franchises, and we've talked about this before, where New York City, Madison Square Garden, it just makes everything bigger and it makes everything more attractive for those of us on the outside to still follow the Knicks. And a couple of years ago, when they brought in Phil Jackson as the president, as the guy who's going to move all the chess pieces, I thought, you know what, this is a genius idea. Phil Jackson, great NBA mind, one of the best NBA coaches of all time, if not the greatest of all time. That's from the coaching perspective. I thought, you know what, Phil's going to do some really good things, and the Knicks are going to come back to prominence, and they're going to come back to, you know, the Pat Riley type of Knicks in the 90s, or when he played for the Knicks in the 70s, in the late 60s. And you look at what they're doing now, and it kind of seems like they take two steps forward and one step back. And it kind of, I mean, I know they have a plan, I get it, but I also think everything is much more magnified because they're in New York. And I mean, you know this, but looking at it from the outside, it seems like they have momentum and then all of a sudden they get pushed back a little bit to where, you know, they can be competitive and then they have, and then they do something that makes you scratch your head. So to kind of get to the point of the question, I like the energy. I just think the pressure and the expectations are still a little bit too high because they were, as you know, horrible several years ago. And so you're asking them to turn completely around in a couple of years. I know it's New York and expectations are always high in New York. And I understand that, but I think you have to give them a little bit of time still, because you can't just turn every, you can't just take all 15 guys on the roster and get rid of them all at the same time. Did I think that Hornacek was going to be the coach that they needed? I didn't think that was the best move. I'm not on board with that. So I don't know. I don't know if it's where to point the finger at, but it has to start at the top with Phil Jackson. I just think patience is a virtue, and I think that it's going to have to be a little bit more patient for a little while, just to see how things are molding and taking shape.
We are definitely going to have to pick up more of a conversation on that New York Knicks topic in our more upcoming shows, man. I didn't realize that you definitely are keeping tabs on what they're doing here in New York in terms of organization and having such a strong opinion. So we're definitely going to have to broach that. But patience being a virtue and talking about presidents, we're going to have to transition our conversation and talk about our current president. As Jay-Z said, Michael Jordan coming back wearing the 4-5. Well, our 4-5 president, the 45th president of the United States of America, Mr. Donald J. Trump. Brian, we know that a lot of people aren't really down with what's going on here. And there are a lot of people who are really, you know, excited and enthused as to what the future may bring. So I'm going to ask, as a person who is unsure of, you know, watching the White House website change in terms of what they deleted and what they've edited, you know, things of climate change, things towards the LGBT community and things of that nature, I'm a little scared as to what's going to happen. So can you assuage my fears a little bit and just tell me not just that things are going to be okay, but give me an insight as to the thinking of the new administration.
First of all, great transition on your part from President Phil Jackson of the Knicks to President Donald Trump. That's a fantastic transition. That's the transition that they teach in broadcasting school. So great transition on your part.
Thank you, sir.
Now to the question at hand. Number one, we have to remember that every single presidential transition, there are going to be differing views, there are going to be differing opinions, and there are going to be different changes on the website. I bet you if you go back to 2009, to when President Bush left and President Obama came in, there were vast changes on that side as well, just because there are two different mindsets and there are two different types of administrations. Now, to your point, as far as the LGBTQ community and that being taken off of whitehouse.gov, let me try to put you at ease this way. President Trump has said multiple times during the campaign that, number one, he doesn't believe that there should be any changes to the LGBTQ community. If you remember, one of his things that he said was the Supreme Court has already handled the situation. That's what he said. So I take him at his word for that. And if you look at people who have known President Trump for a long time, you know that as a Republican, Donald Trump actually does believe in all of the rights for LGBTQ members. He is on the opposite side of what a lot of folks in that party believe. And by the way, I'm on that same side as well. I fully believe in all of those rights for that community. I believe in all the rights for all of people, really. But since you specifically mentioned that, I think it's important to remember that he has gone on record and saying that the Supreme Court has already done their thing and they have already decided. And he said that there's no need for him to do anything about that because that's the way we are. So I'm going to do what a lot of people should do is take him at his word, listen to what he said, and have optimism that it's going to turn out like he talked about. So I think that point is a valid one for what you brought up there as far as, you know, what one of your concerns is.
I'm just hoping that you're going to be able to hold my hand throughout the next 40 years. I know as you move on, I know you're going to be moving on to representing, you know, not just organizing and doing a great job as well. And I want to give you the last couple of minutes to let everybody know what it is that you're doing and the expansion of your role within the party, as well as I know you've launched the Facebook Live page as well. So please, I know you come on every week and everybody gets to hear you, but I want you to, you know, let people know what it is that you're doing and how they can also see you throughout the week.
Yeah, first of all, it's not all about what I'm trying to do. I think it's about us as a nation, what we're trying to do. And I have this discussion with folks on the other side of the aisle. I have friends that are very liberal. I have friends who are very conservative. And as you know, I work for the Texas Republican Party, which is huge. Texas is a red state, as we all know. But I'm not, I'm kind of in the middle as far as a lot of ideas and ideology. But what I will say is this, and this is what I tell my friends who are a little bit like you, who are unsure, who are nervous, and who are not really, maybe not 100% on board with what's happening. So I say this. Number one, you have to have optimism. You have to look at the glass as half full. You have to say, you know what? I've got to be positive in my everyday life, because if I don't, that's only going to go down from there. So number one, optimism. you look at some of the ideas that are going to be coming down the pipe, you have to be optimistic about what's going to happen. If we don't have optimism, what do we have? We don't have anything. So I think optimism is going to be a very big key. Number two, and this is also a great fact in relationships, is listening. A lot of people want to talk about their beliefs, and a lot of people want to bash people for their beliefs. That's not how we get the job done. We need to sit and listen to each other, to our real concerns, and not just bash what somebody believes. We have to listen to what their beliefs are, and then we have to formulate an opinion, and then we have to come back with a concise opposing opinion, or even say, you know what, that actually is a valid point, but I didn't listen to you before, so I was just very angry. I think that's a big part of it, is going to be listening. Number three, compromise. We're all not going to get every single thing we want of every single day of our lives. It's just not going to work out that way. So I think we have to look at some things. We have to compromise on stuff as well. And then also, a big part of it, I think, is going to be respect. You have to, number one, respect the office of the presidency. You have to respect your leaders. You have to respect your fellow person. And like you and I, we're differing opinions a lot. I mean, we've had really good conversations when I was in New York City over the summer, and we send, you know, conversations over text, and we DM on Twitter. So a lot of things that you and I talk about, I know we differ on, but we are the same on a lot of topics as well. So I think the harmony that you and I show in conversations, and where I listen to you and I know that you listen to me, and we kind of might disagree on certain things, but we have that respect factor to where you're not going to yell at me, you're not going to bash me, you're not going to talk trash about me. And I'm the same way with you. You know, I might disagree with some of your ideals, and you know what? That's fine. That's what America's all about. We don't all need to think the same. This isn't Russia. This isn't North Korea. We have the greatest country in the world for a lot of reasons. And number one is freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, but we have to respect one another. I think that's something that is sorely lacking these days in our social scene, is respect. That's a very big key. And to kind of close up this whole soliloquy that I'm doing here and talking about the future, when you look at what we're trying to do, and I don't like to say I do not like to say I, because it's a we thing. It's all of us together. When I look at what we're trying to do, I'm looking forward. We're looking forward. And I think you have to have hope and optimism. And down here in Texas, Governor Abbott, who I'm going to be working with on his campaign, he's up for re-election. And you just have to look at your leaders and hold them accountable, ask questions, and don't be afraid to listen to your fellow man or woman on what they're thinking. And then hopefully we can all start to get along. I remember Rodney King back at the LA Riots? He said, can't we all just get along? You know, that's what, and I know it's not all going to be, you know, flowers and hugs, and it's not going to be that way, but we can have disagreements and have respect at the same time and not have all the vitriol that's being spewed all across the country.
Always a respectful conversation. Going to pick it up again next week. A lot of it. Brian Benway, make sure you join him on Twitter at Brian Benway, that's with the Why Not. Hi, folks. Great debate. Always fun. Brian, catch you again next week, my man. Much appreciated.
All right, my man. Have a great week. Thanks.
And you got it. Enjoy Sunday. And another great conversation with Brian Benway. Great debate segment. Always interesting. Always fun. Getting into East meets West now as we wrap up with some sports talk. Our good friend at Never Complacent on Twitter, Phoebe Nugent, joins us here on the program. Phoebe, another great Sunday on the of football, our last great championship Sunday. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. Before we jump into that, I just want to say, you know, usually when I wait to get into my segment, I listen to the segment before, and I will tell you, I find it really refreshing, because I think that this is something that this country is missing out on. There used to be a civility in which people and opposing sides had, and I don't know where it's gone. And so whenever I find people out there being able to know how to truly stay true to what their convictions are and be able to eloquently speak it, and then the other side do the same. It's refreshing. I wish our country could come back to that, instead of always constantly fighting for only their voices to be heard. Every voice to be heard is a refreshing thing to have. So I applaud your efforts on that, and I hope you continue to do so.
Thank you. Thank you very much. That means a whole lot. That really does for you. I really appreciate that. Great debate segment is something that is really something that means a lot to this show and to why I do this. So the fact that you said that really touches. So really appreciate you, Phoebe, for saying that. And I just hope that's what comes across when people listen to that portion of the show. I know I love doing the sports stuff, but I want everybody to understand that, you know, if we can all sit around and talk about that and all have passion, but still come around the table again, then we can do that about other conversations. So right now, I want to definitely have this conversation with you about these last two games. This is it. This is our last, like, really great, like, okay, I love sports. Like, I love talking about, but I love football, Phoebe, and this is it. So tell me, out of the two games that we're going to get here, are we going to get an exciting last game between the Steelers and the Patriots, or is it all going to be in the first game where the Packers are going to have to, you know, go on the road into Atlanta, and is Atlanta going to shock the world and do what nobody thinks they really can do, which is, you know, really spoil the party, the whole Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady party. You know, they can come in and spoil the party and introduce themselves. Hey, we're the Atlanta Falcons. We're here to stay.
I absolutely feel like Atlanta could shock everyone. It's so funny that we're even talking. I find it funny that the narrative has changed in essence, mm-hmm. in regards to the Green Bay Packers. But it always seems to be that way, that there was questions about Rodgers' ability to be a leader. Can he turn around things? And it's like, how many times have we seen this kind of narrative in the past? But obviously things turn around, and now they're on a momentum, and it's like, oh, who can uh-huh. stop? But here's the thing. Atlanta really at this point, I think they can shock. I hope they do shock, to be honest. I mean, I would like Atlanta to have an opportunity to go and to go to the Super Bowl. I just wish that the options on the other side were different. I feel like this Groundhog's Day, if there was a choice, I would go with the Steelers over there, simply because how many times, and it's not, and I understand it even as a Seattle Seahawks fan, I always want to see the Seattle Seahawks there. But I understand the fatigue that people have when the same team ends up going to the Super Bowl. And sometimes I can understand why anybody in the AFC is like, oh, the Patriots again?
Mm-hmm,
and they deserve
mm-hmm.
to be there, obviously. They deserve to be there. But it's sometimes you just want to see fresh faces and fresh talent and not the same old, same old. And it's up to the AFC to step it up and have some actual challenge to them where they're not always the same face that's always heading over there. But so hopefully, you know, the Super Bowl is going to be the Falcons versus the Steelers. And I hate the Steelers. But anyways, wow. But, you know, it is what it is. If I had to choose between two evils, just kidding.
exactly.
We have history. You know how the Seahawks fans have history with both Patriots and the Steelers. So it is what it is. So
I'm going to ask you real quickly about a team I know you have history with as well. The only team basically still looking for a head coach, my San Francisco 49ers. They've got word on the streets is Kyle Shanahan, Atlanta OC. Looks like he's going to be the next one to manage the San Francisco 49ers. So you have an opinion on Kyle Shanahan and whether the 49ers are making the right move by selecting him as their next HC?
Honestly, sure. I guess sure. It is better than the choices that they've taken. And offense to Chris,
yeah.
I mean, and to Chip Kelly, but it is better in the sense that maybe they've given more pause. I feel like ever since Harbaugh was kicked out of there, a lot of the decision making hasn't been the best because the problem I always had with the Harbaugh fire was
mm-hmm.
they didn't have a plan. They didn't know what they
right.
wanted. They just knew they didn't want him. You don't fire someone who has been so successful in making your team successful because you don't like him, and how to have a game plan for how to put somebody in who's also going to equally make your team successful. So really, the downward spiral of the 49ers is the fault of the front office or whoever, everybody else that's been making all these decisions. So I always reserve at the end of the day what my opinion is going to be until people actually do things. I mean, it's the same way with when everybody, if we go back to political speak, when everybody's freaking out about Donald Trump, to me, it's like the man has done zero so far. Until the man does something, and I mean, obviously he's signed something into law most recently, but or repealed something most recently with the mortgage stuff. But I'm saying until the man has some more stuff under his belt, I'm not going to be going off on imaginary things that hasn't happened yet. Until it has happened, it's all fear-based, and it's all something that's not necessarily true yet. It could be true. So I don't know how well this guy's going to do. I don't know how well Shanahan's going to do. But he can't, and as horrible as this sounds, it can't be any worse. I mean, so
as a San Francisco 49er fan,
it's got to be an upgrade. It's an upgrade.
There's literally nowhere to go. That's going to be the theme of the evening. That's going to be the theme as we close here on the Greedy White Show. Phoebe, there's nowhere to go but up. I always appreciate you joining us. Make sure you follow her on Twitter, at Never Complacent, always jumping on, always having fun with us, and can't wait to get you for next week, and then we get to talk Super Bowl. We got a couple more weeks of football. Super Bowl's coming up. That's a big game in the NFL season. Phoebe, thank you so much for joining us. Until next week.
All right. Talk to you later. Bye.
Now, a very pleasant and very enjoyable Green and White Show. Thank you again, Phoebe, for joining us on the program. Also, Brian as well. Brian Benway, make sure you follow him on Twitter as well. Special thanks also to Ralph Mantini, Reverend Ralph, for joining us on the Green and White Show here. Hope everybody enjoyed the sports talk, a little talk as well. Glad everybody had a good time. I always have a good time doing this. So guess what? I know it's the end of the show, but guess what? We get to come back and do this thing again next week. So here's the part of the show where I say God bless. Where I say go check.
The best team music group. Take
us all.
Alex H.
Alex H.
The Bomb Factory.
That's it. Another show in the book.
Ladies and gentlemen, allow me to properly introduce the most incredible beast from the east. Live and live in color. In shape, fitted to leather, it's soft butter. Color up, my dollars up. I'm winning exotic cars to women, women and more women. More sinning, I'm a disabled. Bless young and gifted. Paul's been lifted. Started from the bottom, I'm there on top of the world. Look, my, I made it, the new most hated. Underestimated since I haven't been painted. Our stories aren't related, so they don't believe. But who cares? I'ma run a few years before I fade to black. My impact,
my shift impact,
back to order, the lyrical master. In the first degree, I am. Young, young, fresh, fresh. Special thanks to all of you who listen each and every week. I really appreciate y'all. Tune in again next week for more sports action. Who's going to win? Predictions later. Follow me on Twitter for predictions. Instagram as well. We are out.